Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. I'm the anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. The host and founder of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Carol will not be here this week. She's on assignment. I'll be handling some of the big interviews, and we're going to kick it off with a fascinating woman by the name of April Kirkwood. She's educator. She has media experience, colorful life, and she has written a book that's coming out very shortly based upon her experiences having an affair as a very young girl with Frankie Valli. She claims that she had an affair with him that lasted over a decade and has left an indelible mark upon her psyche, and she writes about it, and she wants to share her story with the public. The book is titled Big Girls Do Cry, Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters, published by Wise Publishing. First, I want to set the stage that you are within our demographic on this program. We're very proud of the fact that we target 50-plus. Very few radio shows in America today unabashedly talk to people who have been around the block a few times. And we have a very high regard for people who are what we call seasoned citizens. And I also want to mention to our listeners that you have two masters in education in both school and community counseling, that you have a background in the media, that you are a mother, that you are a very dignified human being, and that you seem to be, as far as I know from conversations I've had with you, very dedicated to sharing your wisdom and your experiences with other women and other people. Am I correct in all of this?
That is correct. I was born in the Midwest and now living in South Florida, working on another certification as a mental health therapist, kind of switching gears to focusing on women and relationship issues. So it's a pleasure for me to be here.
Well, your book that is coming out on May 3rd, published by Wise Publishing, which is an interesting story unto itself. It's a group of women who've come together and formed a publishing company. Your book coming out on May 3rd is just a fascinating story. The title is Big Girls Do Cry, and the subtitle is Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters. Now, let's set the time and let's set the stage for people who know nothing about this. We'll go back to, what is it, 1969?
Yes. And it for all of us out there, us over 50 crowd, we will remember it as a time of really, really genuine innocence, believing that dreams can come true, a lack of technology so that once you read the Cinderella story or waited all year for the Sound of Music, there was nothing else but your mind's ability to create what you thought your life should be. There was no media telling you what you could or couldn't do or what the odds were against you. So it was a very innocent time and a wonderful time.
How old were you in 1969?
Oh, in 69. Well, I was born in 57, so 69, I was only 12 years old.
Okay. What kind of a 12-year-old were you?
Well, the truth is we were raised very much in the suburbs of Ohio. My mom was one of the first people to ever get divorced, and I was lucky enough to be able to return with her, like everybody does today, back to grandma's house. And she had six children, so I was kind of like the seventh. And so I had a wonderful plethora of people trying to fill in the gaps. My mother had a lot of mental health issues that back then, of course, were undiagnosed. They gave her a Valium or some other kind of medication and just said, keep moving, keep moving. And she was in so much mental pain, and I always sensed that it was wonderful that I had this support group. But we lived on a chicken farm. My family came from steel mill workers. I was the first to graduate from college, first born, first grandchild, and deeply loved, almost to the point of of destruction.
So it sounds to me, knowing how severe divorce could be back in the 50s and 60s on children, because there was such a stigma attached to it, today it's very different. You fortunately were unscathed by some of the scars that could have fallen your way by that happening. Let's take a look at Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, circa 1969. They already had a decade of superstardom. I remember I'm a bit older than you. I remember when I first heard the Four Seasons in the early 60s, and I heard Sherry, followed by Big Girls Don't Cry, followed by Walk Like a Man. I remember the order of their hits. They were so large-sounding. They were so different-sounding that me, a little pop fan, a little rock and roll fan growing up on Long Island, I became a fan of the Four Seasons the same way today you might be a fan of a sports team. And I rooted for them to keep having number one hits, and I loved their sound. Now, you having been about 10 years younger, how did you cross paths with the Four Seasons in the late 60s?
We were brought up in a very strict Pentecostal background, and I don't know how my aunt, who was 11 when I was born, so she was kind of like my big sister, happened to get these tickets. There must have been an extra one. Somebody didn't go, and I'm attached to her hip, so there they drag April down to Youngstown Stamp Auditorium, and there is Frankie Valli. Now, I have never seen a concert of this size other than a choir. I have never been to something like this. Plus, my father was Italian, and his name was Ralph. He played in a band, and I was the little Italian back in this kind of Amish family, and when I saw Frankie, and I know people think it's crazy, but there was some kind of connection. We're not from the music business. We're not from money. We're from Trumbull County in Ohio. We deliver eggs on Friday, and I just was over the moon. I came home that night. I was going to marry him. I took my Ken doll, colored his hair black, and the rest was history. And my family, being pretty innocent in themselves and loving me so much, they thought nothing harmful would ever come of this.
Well, it was.
I mean, it was something for them to do.
Okay, well, you know, it's not that unusual for a young preteen or a teenage girl to have a crush on a celebrity. This is a common situation. How did it cross the line where it became something serious as opposed to just an everyday garden variety teenage crush on a superstar?
Well, I think part of it was me, that my mother's life was so dysfunctional, and I really didn't have what we would call an absentee dad, being a very quiet, timid dad. And I think I latched on, and my family, like I said, loved me so much, they started to create little velvet suits to match his, a pageant banner that says Frankie, and remember those plastic hats in the political world arena that they would have the Democrat or Republican's name on, and when we put glitter on it. So it got to be that every time Frankie saw this little hat that was very battered by the end of it, he would say, it's a little girl from Youngstown. Mm-hmm. Years went by. You know the Jersey story. Tom DeVito got them in trouble. Frankie kind of downsizes. Finally, he comes back. Now, there's no computer. There's no way for us to check on him. I don't know if he's married. Don't know where he lives. Don't know where he's playing other than calling outside cities. My grandma would say, well, you can call Cleveland, Akron, but we're not going to drive you across the world, April Lynn. So we did that over and over again until actually he had met my grandma, my aunts and everybody, my girlfriends, and then he died down. All of a sudden, I turn 16. I become Miss Ohio. I grow. In between those years, I'm just as lavished with love and grooming. They were grooming me. I don't even think they were sure what they were grooming me for.
Well,
there was a dichotomy.
Did you say that you were Miss Ohio?
Yeah, I was Miss Ohio teenager, and they had me in every pageant.
Mm-hmm.
Every Barbizon School of Modeling, John Robert Powers. At that time, ladies, you will remember, if you weren't over 5'4", you couldn't even be an airline stewardess.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I mean, I was a tiny little baby dago. and proud of it. Very little like him. And so there wasn't a lot for me to do in that field at this time. So I'm not quite sure what they had in mind, because they sent me to church four times a week, but then they groomed me to go out there and make it.
When you say they, who specifically are you talking about?
I called them my dream team, my grandma, my Aunt Jenny, and my mom. And I had no prominent male figures in my life.
Well, would you feel that they were getting vicarious pleasure out of having you fulfill some of their own fantasies?
Exactly. My mother, our favorite movie was Gypsy Rose Lee. And mm-hmm. my mom would wake up and go, oh, the purple cow came to me, and you're going to wear this color dress, or you're going to take lessons on how to walk over here. And it actually did become my DNA. And, you know, people would say, well, how could you live like that? I would go home from school, walk with a book on my head, do my baton lessons, do my nails, do my homework, and that was it.
Well, this was a bigger situation than just you and Frankie, or was he the focal point that you were doing all of this to someday maybe get his attention and win his heart? How did he fit into you and your psyche at that time?
At that time, he was my ticket to mix these worlds together. How could I be a good girl, whatever that was for me at that time, mm-hmm. and be famous and make my family proud, and then marry an Italian like my daddy, my dumb mommy, divorce my daddy, all of that. Mm. And Frankie Valli just hit every button in my basket. They say that every person carries within them a checklist of who would be their ideal partner. And that's when I started to delve into the imprinting theory in some of my postgraduate studies.
We're talking with April Kirkwood. She's written the book, Big Girls Do Cry, Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters, published by Wise Publishing. I'm Michael Harrison. You're listening to A Touch of Gray, and we'll continue with our conversation with April Kirkwood in a moment when the program continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. New guidelines from the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for persons 65 and older reveal that if women drink more than 7 drinks per week or greater than 3 drinks per occasion, and men 14 drinks per week or greater than 4 drinks per occasion, you're at risk for illness or injury. As the body ages, the tolerance to alcoholic beverages decreases. Literally, at 65 and older, you're unable to process alcoholic beverages, as say a person that is 45. Alcoholic overuse and intolerance can worsen mental confusion, problems with balance and falls, depressive disorders, dehydration, inadequate nutrition, adverse interaction with some medications, and can lead to social isolation. One drink is 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of liquor, or the amount in a shot glass. Are you ready to acknowledge that at age 65 and older, that fewer than 7 drinks per week or 1 drink per day is the limit and offers you the advantages of leading a healthier and safer lifestyle? I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison. Let's get back to our conversation with April Kirkwood, author of the book Big Girls Do Cry, Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters, published by Wise Publishing. Let's turn this now into the track where you're involved with him romantically. How did that happen? And give us some details.
I come back. I'm a good girl. They never question anything. I have my license. There he is. I don't know whether it was December 63 or my eyes. I think it was My Eyes Adored You first. It's a hit. He's back at Youngstown. I walk in backstage with that dumb hat, and I look at him, and I said, you don't remember me, do you? And he goes, of course I do, September. And he walks up to me, and that's when we had all those gaudy chains on next, and when real gold wasn't that expensive. And he literally untangled each one delicately. I don't know if it was a minute or a million years, but at that point, the relationship shifted. He asked me to stay for the show. He asked me to go back to the hotel for drinks. And then, of course, I was ushered, you know, into the suite of Mr. Frankie Valli. And I was like, oh, yeah. You know, but for me, it wasn't like that at first. I mean, that night, I was like, this is like my dad.
Yeah. Did you lose your virginity to him?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So, how did you feel about that? I mean, girls lose their virginity in their teens, before they're 18 all the time. And, I mean, this does go on.
Yeah, it was in the middle 70s, so things were beginning to loosen up. I think mm-hmm. the pill had been out for a while. So there was a lot of promiscuity that I had heard about. And I thought to myself, well, like you said, everyone's losing it in the back of a school band bus with a trumpet player or in the basement
of
somebody's house.
Did you feel guilt?
So I'm like, I'm going to do it with Frankie Valli in a limo.
Did you feel any sense of guilt, any sense that you were being bad, and did you feel any sense that he was taking advantage of you?
No, I loved him. I was going to marry him.
I see. Did, looking back at it now, and again, I wish we could jump into this for hours because this is definitely a movie, and hey, there's a book in this for you. but I saw you speaking about this, and you said you still love him, that he's your first and always. How do you feel about Frankie Valli now that you're a mature woman with degrees in social work and education, and you want to get a message out to women? How do you feel about him today, looking back at this from the perspective of being a mature, wise woman?
Well, my new motto today is, where I am right now, is always follow your heart as long as it's not sitting above your head. At my age, of course, that was never going to happen. And the whole book is about how imprinting it happens when you're between the ages of 7 and 11. It's a developmental stage. No one talks about it. And it somehow, for many of us, controls every other romantic relationship in our future. As far as Frankie himself, he never graduated from high school. At the time, he had little girls. I'm not excusing what he did. I mean, knowing me since, in fact, we met when I was like 6 or 7. And he would pick me up and give me his seeds of some food and hold me in his arms on stage. I really think he was as conflicted about the relationship as I was. I don't think he was educated. I don't think he was grooming me to molest me. I don't think he meant any harm. I think in his world, everybody slept with everybody. I don't think he ever thought it was a big deal.
Do you think that this book can do him harm? Do you have any kind of mixed feelings about the impact of this book that's coming out in terms of what it can ruffle up in terms of today's sensibilities?
Well, he yelled at me a few years ago. He was married to Tony, and he was having an affair with somebody it was in the Acquire airline stewardess. Of course, she stole her story. So I've find Frankie on email him, his wife gets it. Well, in the meantime, of course, I'm single. I take my present Frankie Valli lookalike, and the book is about that, how I was so imprinted with Frankie that I really, really sought out Frankie Valli substitutes that were probably the worst thing for me. However, so he sees me, he starts screaming at me, "You don't know better than that." And you could see me shrink to being a 6-year-old. Actually, my body got smaller. And he's small anyhow. And I'm shrinking and shrinking, screaming and screaming. And my boyfriend at the time is standing in the back like, "Oh, my God, what is going on?" So, yes, I'm scared out of my pants to see if he's going to be angry.
Well, he'll either be angry or he will deny this. Or he will try to discredit you, or he will ignore it, and time will tell.
I think he's going to ignore it because the number of pictures that we have and the number of connections I have with him and the number of intense, there's something weird about our relationship.
Well, obviously, that's to say the least. But one thing you're answering here is that there's no doubt it happened. What you're saying is this is not a matter of anybody being able to seriously contest that you ever knew him, that you're just somebody writing
a
book. There's enough witnesses and proof. I'll go along with that.
Boyfriends know him.
Right. I'm not contesting.
I've all brought them to meet him.
Then in conclusion, first of all,
we've
created quite a tease here for our listeners because there's so many details that we could not talk about in the space of time for a radio interview. And I'm going to tell everybody in a moment how to get this book, which is coming out shortly. And it's obviously something people will enjoy reading and learn from. But at this moment for this conversation, what message are you trying to get across to the people listening to this show, that they could come away with something that they can learn from your experience?
First of all, when you're young, you do things without thinking clearly. I think before you go to bed with anybody, that that is a spiritual connecting, a DNA meshing. It's not something to be taken lightly. Number two, for everybody who wants to be a star or is grooming their child to be a star, it's a very different culture. It's a very different world. And when you push somebody in there, you never know what's going to come out of it. And for all of us women, we need to go back. We must go back and look at our imprinting. What message is the little girl inside of you sending yourself so that maybe you're sabotaging the good ones?
Right,
and I'm here for you. I am a counselor. You can reach me on my website, aprilkirkwood.com. My email is there. If you have had an experience with imprinting in an older man, whether it be a teacher, a preacher, an uncle, it doesn't have to be a star. It's someone that was a star in your eyes.
Okay, aprilkirkwood.com. The book is Big Girls Do Cry, Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters by April Kirkwood. It's published by Wise Publishing. It's scheduled to be released on May 3rd. And we've given all the information people need and a heck of a teaser to what is a very, very juicy story, to say the least, with lots and lots of... lots of room to go in different directions and study. April, I thank you for your candor, and it has been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you the best of luck in terms of the book getting out to the people who want to see it, and I hope that your relationship with Frankie Valli in the future is a peaceful and positive one.
I would love to talk to him. I would love to hold him and just say, I don't hold you responsible, but I do want you to know I really loved you. And you really affected my life.
And there you have it. Conversation with April Kirkwood, the author of Big Girls Do Cry, Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters, published by Wise Publishing. It's coming out in May. And all opinions expressed on that conversation in terms of factuality are those of April Kirkwood. I wasn't there, folks. I don't know. But it certainly sounds like she means what she says. And it is kind of interesting, huh? If you want more information, go to aprilkirkwood.com. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're listening to A Touch of Gray. We continue with a conversation behind the scenes in talk radio with Talkers Magazine's Kevin Casey. That's next. Last week and the week before, I played a track called Everything Passes at this point in the program by a group called Gun Hill Road. They have an album kind of interestingly titled Every 40 Years. This group of fellows in their 60s had not recorded since the early 70s when they had a hit. You may remember it, Back When My Hair Was Short, a couple of albums. They were a hot rock band in their early 20s. Now they're in their mid-60s, and they came back and made an album of 19 tracks called Every 40 Years, and it stands as a testament to the idea that it's never too late to follow your passion and relive your youthful dreams and do it even better the second time around. Here's a song that's very appropriate to today's economy by Gun Hill Road from this new album. It's called Selling Apples.
Yeah.
Isn't that just a great song? Three guys in their 60s, used to be rock stars back in their 20s, came back 40 years later. The album is called Every 40 Years, kind of an interesting title. It's Glenn Leopold, lead singer, he wrote the song, and Steve Goldrich and Paul Reich. They're Gun Hill Road, Every 40 Years, the song Selling Apples. And if you're interested in Gun Hill Road, it's a great album. 19 tracks, all kind of new stuff from old guys, and they're really, really seasoned. Lovely, lovely album. You can get it at GunHillRoadMusic.com. GunHillRoadMusic.com. You're listening to A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the point in the program where we turn to behind the scenes in talk radio. We're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who's vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, the trade publication in the talk radio business. And Kevin, we just spent a good part of the first half of this program talking with April Kirkwood about her book, Big Girls Do Cry, Why My Affair with Frankie Valli Matters. And, you know, it certainly is interesting. Don't know how newsworthy it is, which brings up a question. What role does the gigantic arena of celebrity gossip play on traditional news talk radio?
Well, Michael, it plays a role when it intersects with something that's already being discussed or is a major issue that cuts across a broader sector of the interests of American people. So, you know, gossip for the sake of gossip, not really a staple of news talk radio, but when it's relevant to a larger issue, it is something that is discussed.
Perhaps the granddaddy of all celebrity gossip issues for news talk radio was the O.J. Simpson case back in the 90s. And would you say, and I'm, this is a leading question, of course you would say, wouldn't you agree that the Bill Cosby story is gigantic?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in the O.J. situation, you had a, you know, a crime obviously being investigated, murder. And here you have, you know, a very serious crime as well, you know, rape. And again, this is the example of what I'm talking about is, yeah, when these are relevant issues, yes. But whether or not, you know, Brad still loves Jennifer Aniston, now that kind of stuff isn't discussed.
Do you think he does? No. Okay. Kevin Casey, thank you so much. Kevin Casey is the executive editor and vice president of Talkers Magazine at talkers.com. Check it out if you want to find out what's happening behind the scenes in talk radio. And Kevin is a regular member of our cast of characters, senior correspondent here on A Touch of Grey. Speaking of which, we're going to be joined by Steve Wiseman next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed a very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
We tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com. Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannes. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannes. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Time for us to spend the rest of the program with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. He's going to be in conversation now with Russell Friedman. Russell Friedman is a grief recovery expert and co-author of a book titled The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss, published by Taylor Trade Publishing. Here now is Steve Wiseman in conversation with Russell Friedman.
First of all, Russell, what are some of the myths about dealing with loss in general?
Yeah, absolutely. Great first question, because for everybody, our reaction to loss is predicated on what we were taught from earliest stages, sometimes from before we can even remember. For many, many children, the very first instruction, incorrect, that they get about grief is don't feel bad, we'll get you a new dog, or don't feel bad, tomorrow's another day, or don't feel bad, you'll do better next time. Yet feeling bad is a normal reaction to something bad or sad. So it puts us immediately in conflict with our own nature and our own truth to feel not to feel bad. And then the we'll get you a new dog is replace the loss. Imagine if your wife died and someone said, don't feel bad, we'll get you a new wife tomorrow. I mean, just obscene. And and the truth is relationships cannot be replaced, whether they're with animals or humans. Every entity is unique, every dog is unique, every horse is unique, every cat, and our relationships are unique. We have to grieve and complete the relationship before we start a new one with another entity. Of course, the biggest myth is the idea that time heals all wounds, and what I can tell you with a clear conscience is that time can't heal a broken heart any more than time would put air back in a flat tire. It takes action to get your car back on the road. It takes action to get your heart back on the road. And the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss is a book of what actions we need to take to complete what's left emotionally unfinished for us by a death, or sometimes when you have to give a pet away and move away from them. It's not limited to death. So those are just three of the major myths. The other major one is the idea that we're supposed to grieve alone. We were all taught laugh and the whole world laughs with you, cry and you cry alone, which is why grievers isolate so much, because they're taught to. And the worst group, the most isolated group in the world, are grieving pet owners who are told, don't feel bad, it was only a dog or only a horse. And yet, as you know, as a horse owner, your heart and soul are so connected to the being that you love, that when someone says only a horse or only a dog, you just want to run away or you want to strike out at them. So this book attacks and addresses all those issues to help people get complete and be able to have a life of meaning and value, even though it is tremendously affected by the death of a pet.
You know, one thing different in dealing with the loss of a pet than from human companions is that one thing where with pets, we generally have the option of euthanasia, and that brings up a whole nother, area of, just emotional turmoil. How do you deal with deciding to put a pet down?
You know, that is probably the most common question I've had thousands of times over the last 28 years, and there's no bullet point answer that fits everyone. There's a couple of factors, and I have my own personal experience with this as well as the accumulation of all the people I've talked to. One of the things is to really have a vet you trust who can help you interpret the things you're seeing with your pet and the signs. Our vet many years ago, when one of our dogs died, said, and we said to her, how will we know when it's time? We didn't want to keep the dog alive just for us because we were afraid. And he said, watch her. She'll tell you. And it was like almost spiritual words of wisdom from a, just a straightforward vet. And sure enough, there was a particular morning, I'll never forget it, when I looked in Zoe's eyes and I knew, and I and my wife looked in the dog's eyes and she knew, and our daughter, who was then a young adult, and we all went, okay. And when we went to the vet, we were all comfortable enough with the recognition of the signals. You know, the physical facts and the cancer were pretty easy. But the emotional part, and blessedly, because we all knew a little grief recovery as well, we were able to get that done and not question ourselves afterwards. The worst part is people spending the rest of their lives questioning whether they should or shouldn't.
Yeah.
The biggest single question, though, Steve, is whether or not people are keeping the pet alive because they're afraid of the grief they're going to have when it dies. And that's the one where I can help them and say, look, how would you feel knowing that your pet suffered just because you were afraid? And if you think you wouldn't feel good, then you got to think about taking this action as a loving action. And yes, I agree with you. We are put in a position, or we put ourselves in a position when we domesticate animals, that we're going to have this decision-making thing. In the wild, animals don't survive when they're ill because they can't compete.
Yeah.
But here we're in a position of authority or responsibility, and it is an incredible question. But you have to lovingly not keep them in pain, because you have the ability to help make their that transition out of life a little less difficult. You know, that doesn't mean it won't hurt when they die. We're all brokenhearted when our loved ones die.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. You talked about actions, and in the book you talk about five actions we can take to help us grieve. What are they?
All right, the first one is to dismiss the myths. There are actually six we highlight. You know, don't feel bad, replace the loss, grieve alone, just takes time. And one we didn't mention, which is be strong. We're all taught to be strong or be strong for others, which actually teaches us to lie about how we feel instead of telling the truth. So here we give you an option. You can be strong or you can be human. Pick one. We hope you pick human. Now, so you have to dismiss the myths. And then the action thing is to look back at what the losses you've had, especially the ones that relate to pets. Quite often, our first pet loss was when we were a little kid. It could have been a hamster or a parakeet or a goldfish or a dog, cat, horse, pig, cow. And in that, we learn stuff. Usually that's where we hear, don't feel bad or we'll get you another dog and that kind of thing. So we have to go back and look at our history of how we were taught. And by the way, I want to interrupt us and say we're not here to attack our families, our churches, our society. But the fact is we were taught incorrectly about grief. And we have to remedy that. And that's what this book says. It says, let's look at this with a different set of eyes so we can get a better conclusion. And then when we look at our history of losses, we get a sense of what we learned and didn't, so we can dismiss the things that don't work. It doesn't work to not feel bad when you feel bad. Then you're just lying or hiding, okay? Now, the next action is to choose which of the pet losses, an individual relationship with an animal that you loved, and doing what we call a relationship graph. So that's the good, the bad, the ugly in your relationship with the pet. Now, with most of our pets, our relationships tend to be good. It's different than our relationship with humans. You don't have the kind of manipulation and game playing that people have with each other, even when they love each other. It's the closest thing to unconditional love that we perceive because of it's kind of a emotionally what we give our whole heart and soul. We tell everything to the pet. So there's a lot more positives in this relationship graph than negatives. Although occasionally you've got dogs that run away or they bite people, you know, so they're, you know, and even horses can, as you know, can be very cantankerous. They have minds of their own. They're very clever.
Okay.
And so we have to review the relationship with the individual pet just the way you would review your individual relationship with someone, a human who had died or you got divorced from. And then the action of putting the discoveries in the relationship graph into a completion device, which we call a grief recovery method completion letter, rather than just a letter. It's very, very much focused on apologies, forgiveness, and significant emotional statements. So rather than just being a newsletter about how sad you feel, it's a completion letter to acknowledge the things that are important. And, of course, this letter gets read to a living human being who can witness what you're saying so you can feel as if you've communicated to someone who could hear you some things that are valuable for you, and that will allow you to begin to move forward in your life. And then at some point choose to have another pet. Rather than replace the loss, you can have a new pet who will have his or her own personality and not have to be a replacement for the one who died.
Okay. And, you know, it's how long should there's no, obviously, rule of thumb, but how long do people generally wait, or should they wait before getting a new pet? Not immediately, obviously.
You know, that's a great question. My answer is very personal. When our Vishla died 9.5 years ago, I was devastated at level I can't communicate. I try in the book to say how inconsolable I was, and I'm allegedly one of the experts on grief and recovery. I was still devastated to my core. I couldn't stop crying for a couple of weeks, to tell you the truth. But at a certain point, and it turns out to be about 2.5 or 3 months later, all of a sudden one day, having done all the grief recovery work, all of a sudden one day I find myself online looking at Vishla rescue sites. And I went home that day and I said to my spouse, I said, Alice, honey, I found myself looking at these sites. And she said, do you think we're ready? And I said, you know, I'm going to use as a judgment my intuition that if I'm looking, I'm ready. I have done the work, and now my body is guiding me to these sites. And sure enough, we got our new dog, Baxter, who's my heart and soul. He and I do agility championships, and the timing was right. Again, based on following the guts, but having done the recovery work. That's the key, recovery work. And then it will be different timing for everybody, but it doesn't have to be an inordinate amount of time. If you do the work, you can do more quickly when you feel ready.
That's Russell Friedman in conversation with Steve Wiseman. Russell Friedman's book is titled The Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. It's published by Taylor Trade Publishing. Steve Wiseman returns in just a moment to discuss an airline frequent flyer account hacking that's important to all of us. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C. I'm Suzanne Hannis. 1 in 3 American senior citizens injures themselves in a fall every year. That means that nearly all of the country's senior population is at risk of a life-changing injury that may result in a loss of independence and a long period of rehabilitation or even death. The most common injuries related to falls are head trauma and hip fractures, according to the Centers for Disease Control. So how can you prevent such an eventual? Have a home safety evaluation from a licensed physical therapist, routine visits to your medical doctor, exercise 3 times a week for strength and balance training, semi-annual eye exams, and a monthly review of your medications by a doctor or pharmacist. Every time you walk out the door, or even get out of bed in the morning, you run the risk of injuring yourself by a fall. Taking these preventative measures, you do minimize these chances. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy. Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good, healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Stanley will be on Dynavite for the rest of his life.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, it's time for Steve Wiseman to rejoin us. As you know, Steve Wiseman is an expert on scams and fraud. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and also published by Prentice Hall is his latest, Identity Theft Alert. His website is scamaside.com. Steve is here now to discuss an airline frequent flyer account hacking. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, in the news recently, American Airlines and United Airlines both recently announced that last month frequent flyer accounts for thousands of their customers had been hacked by identity thieves, stealing miles to book free trips and upgrades. Now, although the hacking occurred in December, the airlines are just now notifying affected customers. Both affected airlines have told their customers, the victims of these hackings, that the stolen miles will be restored to their accounts. That's the good thing. It's also important to note the important distinction that the computers of American Airlines and United Airlines, they weren't hacked. This isn't like Sony. Rather, this is like the celebrity hacking of the nude photos in the clouds, because in this instance, it wasn't the cloud itself that got hacked, but individual accounts of customers whose usernames and passwords had somehow been obtained by identity thieves to gain access to their frequent flyer accounts. So the lesson of this is one that I previously mentioned many times. First of all, you should use complex usernames and passwords, and most importantly, have different usernames and certainly different passwords for all of your accounts. Otherwise, you're at risk for all of your online activities, from banking to retail purchases, if someone manages to steal just one account's username and password. And very often, you know, the fault, as Shakespeare said, is not in the stars. The fault is in ourselves, because we're the ones that somehow may have open clicked on an email with some malware that has turned over this information to the hacker. Now, I've talked a lot about how to pick a difficult to steal but easy to remember password many times. But here's one tip, and that is pick a phrase like, "I don't like passwords." And you can make each word of that a capital letter. And then you've got the apostrophe in there. And then, to make this even more complex and more strong, add some symbols. Add, three exclamation points at the end. So it reads, "I don't like passwords, exclamation, exclamation, exclamation." Then you can use that as a base password that you can just distinguish with a few letters for each account. So, for example, if the password were to be for your American Airlines frequent flyer account, you could make the password, "I don't like passwords, exclamation, 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 AM. That's going to be a strong password, and it's one that, even if it's stolen, because it's going to be different from your others, your banking isn't in jeopardy, your retail purchases aren't in jeopardy. And the last thing I want to mention is, American and United didn't announce for more than a month that they had had this hacking occur. So remember, it's always up to us for any data breach, for any of these things. The price of liberty is eternal vigilance. So you've got to check all of your accounts on a regular basis to make sure you're not a victim of identity theft.
Thank you very much, Steve Wiseman. Frequent flyer account hacking. What's next? Steve Wiseman's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams and Identity Theft Alert, both published by Prentice Hall, and he also has the website scamaside.com. Check it out. Thanks, Steve. And thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Thank you so much to Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line. Thank you to all our affiliates across the country, and thank you, our listeners. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.